Support from The Morning Show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information available at carthage.edu/grad. Support for The Morning Show also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com.
Intent in his pursuit, he has a merry tune to toot. He knows a song will move their job along. For a spoonful of sugar, I have some medicine. Go down the medicine, go down, medicine, go down. Just a spoonful of sugar, I have some medicine. Go down in a most delightful way.
That music, of course, needs no introduction. It's from the beloved musical Mary Poppins. And Mary Poppins is back at the Racine Theatre Guild for a second run of triumphant performances. It opens to the public this weekend. And for the first part of today's morning show, I want to replay for you a conversation with Doug Instanis, who is the director of the production of Mary Poppins and artistic director of the Racine Theatre Guild, and Jamie Johnson, who is portraying the title role of Mary Poppins. We begin the conversation by hearing from Doug Instanis about how Mary Poppins first ended up on the Racine Theatre Guild schedule last year.
Well, the Playwriting Committee is an advisory committee to me that I do sit on, and we discuss almost all year long about what plays we want to do. It started because we did not receive the rights to do The Sound of Music a second year. We had produced that, and our plan was to do it 2 years in a row, which has kind of been our standard procedure in years past. We do it for a limited run, and because so many people want to see it, we do it for a second year. So we couldn't do that because a tour was coming through, and that often happens if something's happening in Milwaukee or Chicago. They withhold the rights. So then it was like, okay, well, what do we want to do? Well, Mary Poppins has been on our list for a while, and it's a classic story. We won't want to do something that has family appeal. Now, even though this isn't a holiday show, it doesn't take place at Christmas, it still has that feel, that doing something nice for your fellow man type of feel. The kids like it. There's good roles for kids, and it's got great music. So we said, well, let's give this a shot. It's technically extremely difficult. But we've done that in the past. We've done Beauty and the Beast or Willy Wonka or Scrooge, all high-tech shows.
With some magic on the stage.
With the magic on stage. And we've been able to make it work. And I tell you, it's been a great experience. And tickets are, you know, selling out. And the audience has loved it. The cast has loved it. So it was a great choice for the Theater Guild.
The story of Mary Poppins, in some respects, is relatively dark, actually. I mean, darker than people sometimes realize, especially if you look at the original book. And of course, it's given the Disney treatment, which brightens it up a bit, but there's still some sadness around the edges of it. Can you tell listeners a little bit about where this story comes from?
Sure. You know, it's the kind of Victorian family rules and regulations, and everybody has their role in society. The dad does this, the mom does this, and people of wealth have servants and have nannies, and we don't raise our own children, and we need order, and we need all of these things. So that's the family that needs some help. And Mary goes to families that need help, and they need a nanny because the nannies have been hard to keep. They keep running away because the children are so mean, and Mary comes, and she challenges all of those thoughts. And she not only does she teach the children many things, she actually teaches the adults. And I think that's maybe the bigger difference from the movie to the play, is the play really focuses on George's transformation from a distant father to realizing family comes first. That's the most important thing in life. We work for a job to take care of our family. And Winifred has a line, you know, if you lose your job, we still have each other and the children. And you know, Mary teaches them that by showing them kind of a fun part of life and that you can do both. And we have rules and regulations, but we also have fun and we live life to the fullest. And she brings color and excitement into their world. And she turns what they've known as to be the traditional way on its ear. And Brian has Brian Schalk, who plays George, talks about, my world was ordered and well-mannered, and Mary comes and it's all her fault because now everything's chaos. And out of the chaos comes a great understanding and love. So everybody's familiar with the Step in Time and Spoonful of Sugar and all of the fun songs that we expect to see from Mary Poppins and the flying and the magic bags and all the tricks that she does. So it has a lot of that, but it also then has some songs that the adults sing about their struggle with life and their position and finding their place in the world. So those people that like the movie will like the show because it has all their favorite parts, but it's not a copy of the movie. It's very different. There's no vote for women type of thing in there. So there'll be some new things that people will enjoy.
I wonder if either of you are familiar with the original book that this is based on. I mean, have you read that or know anything?
No, I haven't actually read the books. I own one now, but
I haven't had time.
I haven't gotten all the way through it yet.
I haven't read it myself, but I've seen the film Saving Mr. Banks. Right. Have either of you seen that?
Yes.
So that certainly gives you a sense of the chasm between the original book and of course where this story is. What's your connection, Jamie, with Mary Poppins personally? I mean, before there were even auditions and so on.
I've loved Mary Poppins since I was a little girl. So the movie was familiar to me for a long, long time. And I knew all the songs, I knew all the music, and I've watched it, for years. So it's always been a favorite of mine. I was excited when they announced that we were doing the show. I had not seen a stage production of it yet, so I was just excited that we were going to do it. So being able to audition this year and take part and actually get the role was a gift. So I'm very excited about it.
Doug, had you ever seen this on stage?
I have not.
I saw it on Broadway, and so I knew such things were possible. Of course, that's Broadway.
Sure.
As the choice was made, you already said that the Theater Guild has already made magic on the stage before, but that being said, did you go into this with very much trepidation about the specific challenges that this show was going to present?
I think the only thing that concerned me was the flying, because in the Broadway show, Bert, flies upside down and walks the proscenium arch, and Mary flies over the second balcony on her way out. That's a little hard in our space. It doesn't really work. Everybody would be grabbing her shoes as she went past. So I think that was a concern. How important is the flying? Because it's very expensive. Because for insurance reasons, you need to hire professionals that have a lot of experience and have the insurance to cover the equipment and things like that. So we brought in Flying by Foy, and they were wonderful. They did an excellent job. The poor guy, what did he say? He's on the road 320
a
year.
And this was his 38th production of Mary Poppins that he's done.
Right.
Wow.
So they go from place to place, poor guy, all over the country. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that was my only concern. And the other concern is that there are a lot of changes, lots of scene changes where it is a movie script where we go from the living room to the bedroom to the dining room, living room parlor. We ended up cutting Mr. Banks' office because there's just too many scene shifts that would slow the play down, too costly to produce all of these things. So we were able to combine some of the scenes that were supposed to be in the bedroom. They're now in the parlor, and the office is in the parlor, just so the play goes quicker for the kids.
Mm. There was a good turnout of people auditioning for Mary Poppins, so that puts you in a nice position to have really good people to choose from for just about every role.
It does. It's always exciting to me to see the number of people that are willing to give up vacation time and time around the holidays to do a show like this. As you said, we are doing this also for outreach where for 6 days, we bus in around 5,000 kids to the Theater Guild to see the show. And, Friday we did 3 shows in 1 day, and it's 2 hours and One was 2.5 hours. That's our adult show, and the other ones were 2:15. That's a long time, and the cast gives up a lot to do this. And we went 2 weeks without a day off, I think. Mm-hmm. I think we gave them Thanksgiving off, and then, boom, we were
came right back.
And so it's an amazing and humbling thing to see these people work so hard, and the backstage people, people are here late night doing the costumes and the lighting and the sound. So very exciting, very fun, and it's nice when it's so well received. Everybody's worked so hard.
Absolutely.
And then to have such a great response is very satisfying.
Yeah. Jamie, let's talk a little bit about the character of Mary Poppins. Do you feel like, you obviously had seen the film a whole bunch of times and loved it and knew all the music and so on, but do you feel like you really knew who Mary Poppins was before rehearsals began, or
perfect in every way,
or did you significantly come to kind of newer and deeper understanding about who this character is?
Sure. I mean, I knew what I had grown to know from her in the movie, of course, but I also knew I wanted to make her a little bit of my own, and through the different parts of the script, that helped, you know, be able to accomplish that. So I did learn a little bit more about her, and I hope I've brought a little bit of my own personality to her without compromising, you know, the Mary Poppins character altogether. But wanted to make her a little bit unique. But I did learn a little bit about her through this process and kind of how I interpret her to really feel about those kids and how she brings those lessons to them and where they think she's very stern. But on the inside, you know, she really has that loving heart, and that's why she wants to help him out.
Right. Tell us a little bit about some of the people with whom you most prominently interact in this production. I mean, in this musical, the characters who are on stage a lot with Mary Poppins and the importance of really establishing powerful and authentic connection with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm with the kids quite a bit. So Jane and Michael are on the stage almost more than I am, I think. But most of the time that I'm on stage, they're with me. And I'm very impressed with them. For such young kids, they've shown great professionalism and great stage presence. I'm amazed at how quickly they think on their feet. Memorizing their lines, they've done a great job. They know where their place is. They don't miss entrances. And they've been a lot of fun to work with. So that's been great. And they're fun to watch. And I'm on stage a lot with Bert, so he's played by Robert Cruz, and he's been wonderful to work with as well. We've gotten along great since the beginning, and that's always fun because as soon as you know you trust someone, now you can start to play, and you can act, and you can start to work on your characters and how they interact together. And that's been completely comfortable and easy from day one, and we're having a really good time.
Hmm. Doug, explain the character, and Jamie, join in if you like. Explain the character of Bert, who this character is, and sort of on what plane he is compared to Mary Poppins.
That's an interesting question. It's not really answered. He is the narrator of the show, first and foremost. He's telling the story. And so you go from the impression of here is this, mythical person who is going to tell you a story, kind of the old-fashioned way, and you know, showing you what's going on. So in the play, he starts off, of course, kind of, things are happening, this is going on, then he kind of presents it, and then he walks in and out of the action quite a bit. So he'll go from his little inner monologue to interacting with the different characters, and technically the character of Bert is a gentleman who plays many roles in the show. He's a chimney sweep. What is your line? What are you today?
Oh, so you're a sweep now, are you?
You're a sweep now, are you? So he's a painter. He's a sweep. He does whatever he needs to do to get by in this time period. But in our version, more so maybe than the movie, he's the narrator. He tells the story, and he presents it to the audience. And, he's also quite fun. And Rob is doing an amazing job. He has all the great dance numbers, Step in Time, and Super Cal is wonderful.
Hmm. So he is as magical a character as Mary Poppins, right?
Absolutely. He snaps his fingers, and the Mrs. Corey's shop appears, and he decides when the play starts and that we're going to take an intermission now. And snaps his fingers and we have intermission. And so he is that leading player. You know, if you're doing Pippin, you know, in many plays there is that narrator. Joseph has it where we're going to tell you the story and I'm going to narrate it and I'm also going to be a part of the story.
Mm. Jamie, what has it been like to take this score in hand and be Mary Poppins versus watching someone else be Mary Poppins on the screen? I mean, and for all this music that you already knew, what surprises did it hold in terms of finally actually singing it yourself? I mean, I'm sure you probably dabbled in some of these songs over the years, but this way.
No, there were some challenges along the way. Like Doug mentioned, there's some new songs that aren't in the movie, so learning songs that were brand new in the beginning was a little bit of a challenge. The familiar ones, you at least knew the melody, but then learning how to not just sing them in your car or sing them in the shower, you know, but you're actually singing them where people are listening is a whole different story. So just a lot of repetition, a lot of practice, listening into it in the car. You know, wherever I was, I had the music playing, sitting at my desk at work or driving in my car or even at home while I'm, you know, cooking dinner in the kitchen, just having that music on and listening and singing it, and to the point where my children now know all of the words and they can sing along with me. So that's pretty much how I approached it and got to know what I needed to know to present that.
Tell us about a couple of your favorite pieces, and for sure we should have one that you yourself sing, but maybe there's something else that you also really like, but you don't get to sing it. You get to listen to other people do it.
It's so hard to pick a favorite. A lot of people have asked me that. I have a couple of favorite moments in the show are some of the more simple ones. I love singing Chim Chimney with Bert at the end of Act One. It's a fun moment for the two of us. It's right before I leave for the first time, which also is different from the movie. Mary Poppins leaves in the middle of the show. And that's just a wonderful, simple song that we get to sing together, and it's just a lot of fun. I love doing that with Rob. And I also love singing Feed the Birds with Betty, who plays our bird woman. It's just a wonderful, beautiful song. And to watch her and then to get to join her in singing it is just, that's one of my favorite moments in the whole show.
Know how loves are simple and few. Listen, listen, she's calling to you. Feed the birds, tuppence a bag. Tuppence, tuppence, tuppence a bag. Tuppence.
You know what's also nice is, and I don't even know if there's a proper name for it, at the end when you bring the locket down and you have that little moment where you sing when every job is complete. Is there a name of that, or is it just a transitional song?
I think it's a transitional song, but I like that part
too.
Yeah,
and so you just come there and okay, I'm done now, and I'm going to leave him a letter and the locket. And that's supposed to take place in the bedroom, but because I didn't want to shift for another 5 minutes, we put it in the park, and she's got the stars behind her, and it's a very sweet moment that happens.
It wraps up the show nicely, yes. and it's I've done what I came here to do, and even though I really want to stay because I've grown to love these kids, I have to let them go. I have to let them do what I've taught them to do on their own, and that's that moment, and that's pretty special too.
Sure. Yeah.
With every job, when it's complete, there is a sense of bittersweet. That moment when you know the task is done. Though in your heart you'd like to stay, to help things on their do it alone.
What about the moments in which the stage is full of characters, full of actors, particularly those moments that are everybody is dancing up a storm to Kara Ernst's amazing choreography?
There's quite a few of those. they're a lot of fun. That's when the energy really picks up in the show, and those are a lot of fun. Jolly Holiday and Supercalifragilistic and Step in Time with the Chimney Sweeps are high points of the show. There's high energy, and it gets everybody up and going, and it gets the audience, you know, kind of picked up a little bit too, and those are a lot of fun. They're challenging. We have some really fast costume changes in Jolly Holiday that, you know, pose a significant challenge sometimes, but those are some really fun, upbeat moments in the show that we have a good time with.
Hmm. I think even Curtain Call is probably the most demanding because you're wrapping up three or four songs at one point, plus everybody is on stage.
Yes. At the end.
Even all the family members, everybody. Mm-hmm.
Everyone at the same
stick
time.
Stick around for Curtain Call because it's fun.
It is.
We haven't yet talked about very much about Mr. and Mrs. Banks, and they're, of course, two of the most critical characters, and I should think that there are a lot of ways in which those characters could be painted a little bit cartoonishly, and what they experience would not be quite as deeply affecting if you aren't really careful with those characters and portraying them the way I think they're being portrayed in this production. What do you want to say about those two and the people portraying them?
It's helpful that the play fleshes out their characters more, especially George's character. He's got a couple more songs. We talk about his evil nanny. He talks about his dreams and what he wanted to do when he was a kid, and he wasn't allowed to do it, and how his parents treated him. And, you know, Brian, I think people will find that they want to give him a hug. And, you know, he's a very sweet man, and he's got a nice voice. And even though when he comes across as stern and distant, there's still a very likable quality about him that I think Mary sees, that he can be taught and that he can learn. And there's a specific moment that Mary and George share where she reminds him of his youth by bringing him a kite. And that's a really emotional part. And it's really the start of his transformation and his awareness of how he's supposed to be.
There are a couple other characters that I think we should talk about, and one of them is someone we've only mentioned really, really briefly, and not by name, I don't think, and that is the evil nanny that is from Mr. Banks's past, and that would be Miss Andrew. And talk for a moment about this particular character, and Jamie, you should chime in since you have one of the most dramatic scenes opposite her, but talk about this character and the essential ingredient she is in this story.
Well, George isn't very happy with Mary Poppins, and why can't we find a nanny that will stay? And then Mary, to teach them a lesson, she leaves, and so now they don't have a nanny. So Winifred decides, well, I've heard such wonderful things about your nanny. I think I'll try to find your nanny and see if she can come back, and that's Miss Andrew. And so she finds her, brings her back, and we find out this is a awful woman. And Marcy does an amazing job of being an awful woman because she's such a sweet woman in real life. But she is, you know, she wants to give people, you know, what they call brimstone, which is the, like, cod liver oil, you know, something nasty to give the children. And she yells at them, and she's mean, and she grabs them, and you're going to boarding school. And she's just really nasty, and I will teach you how to be, you know, an adult. And so you learn why Mr. Banks became Mr. Banks. And so all of a sudden everybody sees him and kind of pities him and understands why he had trouble growing up. And so, you know, Marcy comes in. Everybody realizes how wonderful Mary Poppins is. Mary Poppins comes back and then has the big, I'll let them tell you about your big scene where Mary and Mrs. A go at it.
Well, Marcy and I have a wonderful scene together. It's a lot of fun. And once I do come back and the kids tell me that Miss Andrew has arrived, we return to the house and she comes out and sees me there And we have a great song where I decide that's enough and she doesn't need to be here anymore and she doesn't need to be treating these children this way anymore. And now that I'm back, there's no space for her. So I tell her in so many words she needs to pack and be on her way. And we have a fantastic song that ends with her leaving quite dramatically with some of the servants. And it's always a big hit. People like that one a lot. But it's different. It is one of the darker moments in the show. It's not a happy song. it's a dark, you know, song that is a contrast to some of the other bright and shiny moments of the show. But it is still a lot of fun. And I adore Marcy. She's talented. She's wonderful. She's sweet. I'm trying to figure out how to keep her around. So she's wonderful, and she's extremely talented. I'm really glad she came to play with us in the show.
Right. And it's important to say how nice she is, because you would never guess that from how vividly she portrays this character on the stage. I also want you to talk about the character. I can't remember the character's name. Who kind of leads off supercalifragilistic. And that's a moment that reminds me a little bit of almost like the world of Harry Potter.
Right.
That there are other magical beings beyond just Mary and Bert. And just talk about that.
Yeah, that's really different than the movie. And Harry Potter is a good example of that. Mrs. Corey, right. And she is this magical person that runs a conversation shop in the park that Bert snaps his fingers and boom, there it is. And there's a crazy group of colorful people that are there to have fun and talk and chat, and they need to buy letters and they ran out of words, so you can't purchase any of that anymore. So, and she remembers little Georgie when Georgie was a kid, and everybody goes, well, how is that possible? That would have had to be 40 years ago. Well, it's just a magical type of thing. And we pick out some letters, and then we have to figure out what they spell, and they spell supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, and that leads us off into this magical, fun, energetic song. So it was very clever how they decided to incorporate that into the play version.
Mm. And I imagine, Jamie, that's an example of a song where you know it a bit from the movie, but that's not the same as actually delivering the goods and dancing it and so on.
Not at all. I mean, there's no carousel, there's no horse race, there's no, you know, none of that like you see in the movie when they sing that song. So it was different, but the excitement of it is a whole lot of fun, and Jennifer brings a great energy to that and starts us off and kicks off the talk shop, I think we call it, where you buy the conversations. That's what I want to go and do from her. But she's out. So as Doug mentioned, we buy letters from her instead, and that's how we spell out the word and kick off the song. So while it's the words are the same or the tune is the same, the whole setting of the song is completely different. So it added something new and exciting to it.
Here we go.
We should talk about the matter that we touched on briefly earlier about flying, the flying of Mary Poppins. I hope it's okay, Doug, if I mention this, that my understanding early on in the process was you had serious doubts if even that it could be afforded to actually fly Mary in Mary Poppins. And I'm sure, you know, that was, I could tell when you told me that was, you know, not even fun to contemplate, but it was perhaps not going to be possible. And then one way or another, it became possible. So,
well, there's three moments in the play where she technically is supposed to fly. And we had flown people in Willy Wonka. And so I had budgeted for, and we flew two people. Just, Grandpa Joe and
Charlie
went straight up during the fizzy lifting drink scene.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I knew what the price was for that, so that's what I budgeted for. And then when I started trying to find people, it was twice that.
Jeez. And that's thousands of dollars
about. Yeah. Right, yeah. And it was like, oh, well, I've seen other productions where they put her in gobo and, you know, in silhouette in the background, and could we do that? You know, how much was this going to sell? And early on, we decided this year we were going to do this play as an added show. Most often when we do a new show, it becomes part of the season. Mm. So I know 60% of the seats are sold already. Mm. And so I can count on a certain budget. And for this one, nobody was buying tickets. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to trust that ticket sales are going to pick up as we get closer and around the holidays. And, you know, people expect it. So let's do it. And they came down a little bit. I came up a little bit. And we were able, actually, it turned out really wonderfully for us because they said, okay, we can come down in price if we can do it a week earlier. And so, sure, I don't care. You come in whenever you want. And so we didn't have a set. No. We didn't have costumes. We didn't have anything. And they came on the bare set because he was coming between Chicago and Appleton.
So this was not a special trip then.
Right. So he was on his way, and he could bring some of the equipment with him because he was striking one show, and he was coming through, and he could drop it off. We didn't have to ship it, which is a big cost. So because of those things, so we actually got the flying equipment, 2 weeks before we opened instead of 4 days.
Wow, which is better.
Well, yeah, so it gave us a whole opportunity to do that. So we were able to work it out. And but, you know, they're very strict. You have to be trained. You have to sign off for insurance reasons. You can't just say, okay, Greg, today I need you to come in and be a flyer. Mm. No, because you weren't trained by the professional, and we all
and you don't just mean Jamie, you mean the people that assist her.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
So she's flying, but when you're talking about the flyers, right, you're meaning the technicians be backstage.
Yeah, technically, if we had understudies, that person would have been trained. The harness would have had to be fitted separately, mm-hmm. and worn by the person in front of. We used flying by Foy, the fight director. So they're very specific and very serious about safety and their equipment, and their people will come in and train. Matter of fact, the effect that Bert does where in the Broadway show where he walks upside down, you can't have volunteers do that. Those have to be their people because of the difficulty. That's not something they would train us to do. So even if I had the money to pay for that effect, I would also have to hire them to stay for 3 weeks.
Wow.
And run the show. Woo. So because of insurance purposes. So right. It's fun. The kids like it. And it's a beautiful image to see Mary floating off into the sky. I wish you could come over the audience, but the way it works out with us, it's just not practical.
Right. I remember a past show where some flying happened kind of over the audience, which on the one hand was exciting, but on the other hand, when it's right above you, you really see...
You see all the tracks and all the wires.
And it's loud.
We did that with Peter Pan. They didn't come over the audience, but they came down really close to the audience. They came almost to the front row of the audience. And then you saw the people flying. You saw them hiding behind curtains, pulling ropes.
Right.
I was part of that fly crew, so I knew that. So this is a little bit more magical.
Right, it really is. Jamie, explain what the process was like. And, of course, you were part of it. Describe just how lengthy a process and complicated a process it was for the people flying you to be trained. Tell us about that.
It takes a lot more people than I ever anticipated. There's a group of five people that every time I'm in the air, there's five people responsible for it.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And that, so we had a fly rehearsal. Once the company came in and installed all of the cables and tracks and whatnot, everybody who was going to be involved in the production at any time, along with myself, we had to come in for a rehearsal, and I think we were in there 3 hours or so. And it started with how I put my harness on, how I get it connected, how they check to make sure that I'm connected safely and correctly, how they connect me to the cables, how they lift me, how I travel. So there's somebody who's responsible for making me go up and down. There's someone responsible for making me go from left to right so I can travel across the stage. There's somebody responsible for catching me at the other end or being ready, to receive me as I come down, detach me. So we went through several steps, and we had a lot of people that were going to be responsible for that because we have daytime shows and nighttime shows. We have some different crews. So it was quite a long process, but I thought, too, that they did a wonderful job. At no time did I feel unsafe or scared or anything. They did a wonderful job being thorough of, this is how we're going to keep you safe. And as long as everybody's doing what they're supposed to be doing, here's how it'll work. And that's how it's been. It's a lot of fun. And I don't have to worry about it. I have some great fly teams that are doing a really good job. So it's fun.
Yeah.
I love that we got that we were able to do it.
I remember when I saw this on Broadway and saw Mary Poppins fly. I mean, it's still one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had in a theater. And it's so interesting how even when you know at least vaguely what's happening – it's amazing how, you know, you don't have to be 10 years old to be just kind of blown away. And here at the Theater Guild, I even knew more. I wasn't there when the training happened, but I mean, I really had a pretty good idea of exactly what was going on there and your, you know, its harnesses and this and that. And nevertheless, it has an amazing capacity to seem absolutely magical. And I can't even imagine what it's like for the little kids. I mean, I'm guessing you're hearing oohs and ahs like crazy when that happens.
Somebody yelled, "Goodbye, Mary," during one of the performances.
They did at the end of the show. Somebody yelled goodbye. But from what they tell me, you can't see the cables.
You really can't.
Which I think is wonderful because, I mean, obviously I'm back there. I see all the hardware. I know what's going on. And even as I get lifted into the air, even for me, it's kind of a fun moment because it is. It wraps up that whole idea of Mary Poppins that, you know, off she goes. There she goes. She came in as if. It was as if the wind just blew you in, and then it takes you out. Mm. So it's a really fun aspect of the show. Mm.
Jamie Johnson is portraying the title role in the musical Mary Poppins. Doug Instanis is the director of the production, which opens to the public this weekend, and it runs for just 2 weekends. So if you are interested in tickets, you should contact the Racine Theater Guild. You can call the box office at 633-4218, or you can go to their website, racinetheater.com. Another big event this weekend that we want to make sure you know about is the holiday concert of the Racine Symphony Orchestra. And this, of course, is a big event that many, many people look forward to year after year. And I'm really happy to be able to spend a couple of minutes on the phone with Bob Benson, who is familiar to many of you, particularly for the wonderful performances which he has delivered on the stage of the Racine Theater Guild and a plethora of different productions. And he has become very well known to the community as well for all of the wonderful singing he has done with the symphony for quite a number of years now on their holiday concert. This has become yet another new and cherished tradition for the Racine Symphony Orchestra. And their concert on Friday night will again feature Bob Benson as the guest singer. And Bob Benson, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg. Always a pleasure.
I suspect that even though this is getting to be old hat for you, that is, being on that stage with the Racine Symphony, I suspect that the great thrill that you felt the first time you got to do that is largely still in place, I am guessing.
That is exactly right. I never get tired of that thrill of standing in front of that awesome group of musicians who just thrill and wow me every time I'm able and fortunate enough to sing with them.
I know that the first time you did that, it was actually a very intimidating situation as well for all of your experience on the stage in musicals. It's not quite the same as what you experienced in singing with the orchestra. Is it a little less scary now?
It is a little less scary, but that same excitement and surge of adrenaline still goes through me every time I stand on that stage. I mean, yes, it's the fright has gone away, but the excitement is still alive and kicking.
Well, that sounds like exactly the perfect combination that one wants. So
exactly.
I know our listeners are excited to hear specifically what you are going to be singing on Friday night.
Oh, I hope so. I'm fortunate enough to be singing one of my very best favorite songs in the whole world, O Holy Night. This song has held a huge spot in my heart for years and years. It was actually the first song I ever sang as a solo. And I, for years, thought I was 11 years old, but I came to find out I was 9 years old, actually. My mother passed away a few years ago, and I was cleaning out her things and came across the Christmas bulletin from our church service where I sang it for the first time. And turns out I was 9.
Okay. Still a great story, and it's wonderful that you have the chance to sing this on the stage with as fine a group as the Racine Symphony. The other things you're singing Friday night?
I will be singing the Christmas song, more commonly known as the Chestnut Song. I'm singing a medley called Christmas on Broadway, which are songs taken from or used in Broadway shows. Some of them, I was surprised actually to see that they were appeared in a show. So that's kind of fun. They're certainly familiar songs, but they show up in different Broadway shows. So that's fun for me. And then I'm fortunate enough as well to lead the sing-along, which has become an RSO tradition at the end of the evening, which is a medley of carols that will be done with the full orchestra, all of the student choirs, and myself.
Right. And this is a good time to mention that the Racine Symphony and you will be also joined by young singers from Racine Lutheran, from Prairie School, and from Park High School. And that always is exciting to have the stage filled with that many musicians, and of course you in the spotlight. We want to remind people that if you're interested in being part of this concert at Festival Hall Friday night, you can go to the Racine Symphony's website to find out ticket information, or call them at 636-9285, 636-9285. And Bob Benson is back as the guest soloist on Friday night. Bob, I know you'll be a great hit once again, and I appreciate you taking a couple minutes to talk with us on the morning show. Best wishes to you and the Racine Symphony.
Thank you so much, Greg. Pleasure chatting with you.
And to finish out today's Music Potpourri, I am really happy to be connecting now with John Krill, who is someone who has been on the morning show a time or two before. I happen to know John Krill as a Carthage grad and a former voice student of mine. John now teaches music at K-Tech Charter School here in Kenosha, and he is also the director of the Kenosha Chamber Choir. And this ensemble is going to be participating in the concert coming up this Saturday afternoon at Reuther High School, the Kenosha Symphony's annual holiday concert, 2:30 p.m. And it is an absolutely wonderful tradition that has become deeply appreciated by the community, in part because of the fact that due to the great generosity of the Kenosha Area Chamber of Commerce and some other donors, the tickets for young people, 18 and younger, are made available free of charge, which is a great way then, I mean, for families to come and enjoy this concert. You should call the box office for more information, and we'll give you that number in just a little bit. But in the meantime, we want to talk a little bit with John Krill about the beautiful work that his group is going to be singing with the Kenosha Symphony, and also talking about a concert that they have coming up later on Saturday. John Krill, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thanks for having me, Greg.
It's really kind of cool that someone as young as you already has, in addition to their teaching job, this wonderful gig with an adult community choir like the Kenosha Chamber Choir. I suspect that really is an exciting opportunity that maybe you didn't expect to have quite so soon in your career.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell us about this collaboration with the Kenosha Symphony and specifically this work that your group has been preparing.
I'd love to. So the KSO has invited us to sing with them at their annual concert, and we'll be doing three pieces with them. The first one is Fantasia on Christmas Carols by Vaughn Williams, and it's really a neat piece. It's just under 15 minutes long, so it's quite a work, but it takes Christmas carols that we've all grown to know and love, and it weaves them together in an intricate way with a beautiful baritone solo covering much of the piece, and the choir and orchestra filling in the spots as you go along.
You're also doing a piece by John Rutter that is one of my very, very favorites, and I suspect you and your group have had a fun time preparing the Shepherd's Pipe Carol. Talk for a moment about this piece and describe it for anyone who hasn't had the pleasure of hearing it.
Oh, absolutely. So Shepherd's Pipe is a piece that really focuses on choir a lot. The orchestra is very quiet underneath it, grows and contrasts as well, but a lot of unison to these beautiful harmonies that go, they expand, they come back together, then they switch it up and do another thing, and as the song grows, it kind of grows in volume as well, and the intricacy that John Rutter puts into it.
And then last but not least, a very familiar carol that I think a lot of people know and love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, "'Twas the Night Before Christmas." We all grew up reading it and having it read to us. Ken Darby does a fantastic job of putting this to music with a kind of swing as you go through it. And this one as well is about a 30-page score, so as you're going through it, it's quite a work. But I know the choir just loves it, I love it, and it seems to really be a crowd pleaser. And in the way that's written, obviously the text is quite dear to us, but also the way that it's written is put together so well, and so it seems effortlessly.
Hmm. John Krill, the director of the Kenosha Chamber Choir, and they're going to be on stage at Reuther High School this Saturday afternoon at 2:30, collaborating with the Kenosha Symphony Orchestra for their annual holiday concert. And tickets will be available at the door. You can go to the Kenosha Symphony's office or call 636-9285 or go to their website. And we want to remind you that due to the support of some special sponsors, tickets can be arranged for free for all concert goers 18 years old and younger. You can contact the box office to find out more information about that. And as if the Kenosha Chamber Choir weren't busy enough, later that very day, actually 7 o'clock that evening at St. Matthew's Episcopal Church, 7 p.m., they will be presenting a concert of Christmas favorites, including Eric Whitaker's Glow, New Hosanna, arranged by Dmitri Shapovalov, and John Rutter's Shepherd's Pipe Carol. And tickets will be available at the door at St. Matthew's for that concert Saturday night at 7 p.m.